This podcast is supported by Podcast Labs, Bournemouth's full-service podcast production and marketing agency.
Hello, and welcome to The Tenth Degree. I'm Anthony Story. So, how many of you roll your eyes and drop your head at the word spreadsheet? Some of you lucky devils will probably perk up and get a spring in your stride. Either way, finance is vital. You have to know where you stand. You have to be able to plan. Chris Grubb is a finance director for a number of different companies, and we dig into the meat and potatoes of finance and budget. We wallow in the muck of forecasting, and we try to discover if there are any jokes about accountancy which are actually funny. Wish us luck. Oh, and a review would be greatly appreciated. Enjoy. Today I'm with Chris Grubb. Chris is a freelance financial director. So I like to think of him a bit like an ancient mystic or maybe a Zoroastrian yogi wandering through the sand-swept lands of Bournemouth metropolis, dispensing pearls of wisdom to anticipating business initiates, eager to integrate new ideas into their strategies. Now, is that too much?
No, that's right on point. I would say you've got me. You got me to a T there. Yeah, well, meandering definitely.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, and sand-swept kind of works as well. But I'm piling on the romance a little bit because I think that what you do is probably one of the most or more underappreciated talents, and doesn't always get the respect it deserves by your typical freewheeling entrepreneur. So I think the power a good financial director has to shape business thinking can be pretty profound. I mean, there are many entrepreneurs are driven by passion and vision, but can be flawed by a simple question as simple as, how much money do you need to make in quarter four? And I mean, where's the passion in discussing quarter four? So without clear targets, though, how do you know when you've reached your destination? So, Chris, you're an accountant. You're a member of the Chartered Institute of Management Accountants. And you might be getting the impression that I think you're sometimes a little underappreciated. Is that just me? Or do you find that when you are talking to people about what you do, that on the whole, they don't always understand the value that you're there to offer?
Yeah, I think absolutely. The most people would see the accounts department or finance function as a back office function. It is one where we essentially keep score of the results going on. And it's not one that necessarily builds value or can create value for a company. And you're right, perhaps part of why what I can achieve today with this is to convince people that there is value to be had from a good finance department.
I mean, how do you see yourself? Do you see yourself as a finance department? Do you see yourself as an accountant? Do you see yourself as a consultant?
Yeah, I would see myself more as the finance department, I would say, on a consulting basis. Less so as an accountant, although, like you say, I am a chartered accountant. I think generally when people hear the role accountant, they want to be talking about their own year-end tax, corporation tax, and submissions to Companies House. Whereas from my perspective, it is more the forecasting, budgeting, setting targets, like you say, and then comparing the actuals to the budgets and the forecasts and seeing where we are.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, using the word accountant can be a bit of a dangerous territory because I've been doing some research and it seems to me that accountants are uniformly painted in pretty grey and dull colours. But you don't actually strike me as being good in the mould. I mean, people can't see, but you are the picture of sartorial elegance today. No suit, no tie to be seen. But still, you are the butt of 1,000 jokes.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And I've been looking at some of those jokes. I'm not convinced all of them are funny. So I think we should maybe try and explore that a little bit to liven things up. I mean, for me, the background for me in both those departments are that I first became aware of the concept of the financial director when I was delivering a project for London Electricity, which was one of the old big energy companies back in the day. So I'd helped organise a big cross-company conference where all the directors had to give a presentation about the visions, and then on comes the FD. And it was interesting because it was the first time I appreciated there was a difference between the role of an accountant and a strategic mind who understands how commercial finance works.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of important. But I'll kind of just say one other thing about it, because he then came on and I think he was quite aware of his own image, and he self-confessed his own propensities cause boredom, and said he had been told that he had to tell a joke. And he said, what's the difference between an introverted accountant and an extroverted accountant?
I don't know.
Well, an extroverted accountant looks at your shoes when he's talking to you. So I still remember that, but I'm not sure that it's very funny when I say that joke. But I think when he said it, it was quite funny because the room was laughing. So we'll come back into that. But so what do you think the difference is between an accountant and the FD?
Okay, I think the FD focuses on the business and the operations. It's there to try and make more money more efficiently for its shareholders. Ultimately, we can do that by recording more data and analyzing that data and making decisions based on the information we have at hand, more so than an accountant that, for me, is more focused on producing a set of year-end of results, which they can then file with Companies House.
Okay.
So we're purely based on making improvements to the business operationally and hopefully financially.
So when you come to a company for the first time, what are the first questions that you ask them?
What bookkeeping software do you use? But more so, how do you currently record your data? Every company is going to have a different set of revenue streams. Are you actually splitting out those revenue streams within your bookkeeping software? If you are, and I would probably say none of the companies I've gone to yet were, now we look at the direct costs related to those revenue streams. Are we able to allocate those costs or divide them up among those revenue streams? And we can then begin to see that, the margins related to the sales mix. We can start to look at where the best margins are, and are we able to increase those volumes, or is it potentially easier to increase volumes where there might be a smaller margin, but the economies of scale and the volumes will improve quicker.
So when you split a revenue stream, what does that actually mean in practice?
Okay, you can split you've got revenue or income or sales as a whole. It's 100% month on month, or you can talk in terms of 12 months for the year. You can divide that up however you like. You could divide it up by the different services you provide. You could divide it by the different products you could provide. You could, if you were a graphic designer and you only ever designed logos, then I might be looking to divide it up by either your client market or the markets you're working in. So is it other design houses or design industry that your work is coming from, or is it maybe private sector or public sector? Is it the farming industry or some other? And so, or you might be looking at geographical location, or there's multiple ways, but I would say, however you divide it up, only divide it up by four or five different segments. You're not looking for much more than that.
And what's the benefit of that? Is it because then you can start to see where your main revenue is coming from?
Absolutely, okay. Yeah. If you can divide it up by, say, four or five, and you know, let's say 60% of your revenue is coming from the government or the public sector, and you know that there's going to be a freeze on budgets coming up, then we now know what percentage of your revenue and your business is likely to be hit, or at least reduced by this budget hold. And okay, then we might then look to grow the other revenue streams that you've got going. We know now where to focus your marketing attention relative to the different streams.
So by implication, does that mean that when you first start talking to companies, that then you can understand, especially in early days, that your approach is just to try and get customers? So yeah, there's the approach is, well, if we just throw enough jelly at the wall, some of it's going to stick, but some of it's stuck over there, some of it's stuck over here. And so what you're trying to do is to use the numbers to educate the people who are running the business to say, look, this is where your core market is coming from. And it's quite hard to maybe they know that a bit. They just haven't admitted it to themselves. Is it?
Yeah. I think to be fair, when you are starting out, then you want mud to hit anywhere. So I think, you know, we probably don't need to analyze that too mm-hmm. In depth. But I think after 2 to 3 years, when you've got a steady stream in different markets, then it's worth understanding where the revenue's coming from and which revenue streams we're making profit on. In addition, you might want to work out, you know, have you got a business strategy which is going to focus on a certain industry or a certain product? You're trying to raise awareness. If you've got a business development director or manager or sales marketing, and you're giving them a fixed budget to increase the revenues in a certain area of your business, then don't you want to know where you were and where you are after 12 months or 18 months, 24 months, relative to the forecast that business director gave you or promised you prior to you handing them the budget? Mm. So for me, it's this constant feedback loop, working with the business strategy, setting budgets, forecasts, and then reporting the actuals against where we want it to be.
So I guess the other part of that equation is the costs as well. How much are you spending in terms of trying to service those particular clients that you're trying to segment?
Yeah.
So are you able then to try and link, well, these clients might be bringing in a lot of revenue, but actually they cost a lot of money at the same time. So even though it looks like they could be where the profitable business is going to be, all they're doing is keeping things ticking over. And actually the profit lies somewhere else because we can service them at a fraction of the cost it takes to do these other people over here.
That is precisely it. So that's where it comes into the sales mix. So at the top, you've got the revenue or the sales. And then when you take away the cost directly relating to those sales, then you can look at the gross profit. And it's by analysing the gross profits in the different revenue streams that you can start to see where are we making our money and where are we running around like headless chickens. And obviously the key is to focus on where the margins are the highest, unless you know of a revenue stream which you can grow quickly and easily, and in which case, I mean, ultimately, it's not about percentages, it's about pounds. So if you can increase the pounds via a lower percentage, then I would recommend you head that way. If not, then you need to focus on where the higher percentage margins are. Yeah.
So in order to try and do that, I mean, that's starting to deal with quite a lot of figures, and so presumably some of those figures exist, a lot of them might exist in the back of an Excel spreadsheet somewhere. Probably some of the time that people spend is not quantified at all. I mean, you know, not everyone has timesheets, and maybe timesheets don't actually work. I mean, we know some companies who just don't believe in timesheets at all. So when you come in and you start to sprinkle your FD magic around, what do you need to do to practically try and extract this information?
Well, first and foremost, you need to speak to the managing director or CEO and ascertain, well, which markets or products or services do we want to report on? But I wouldn't advise many more than 4 or 5 in each area. Most of the bookkeeping software these days has tracking codes, so we can implement those tracking codes into the software. And of course, we now need to record, in the first instance, we need to record the invoices out to customers. Now, depending on the type of company that you are, if you're a business to customer type business, then it potentially a lot harder in terms of services. Where you've just got a narrow or a smaller number of invoices going out to clients on a monthly basis, which is generally the industries that I work in, the kind of professional services industries, then it is a lot easier. And you just need to ask the salespeople or the MD which clients belong to which segments generally. And as I say, you've probably got 2 tracking codes you can use. So you can use it in terms of what industry they're in and in terms of what service they're in. And now you can kind of form a matrix. Allocating these different tracking codes to, say, people's time can be a bit harder. especially when there's project management involved, there's non-billable hours, did you want to track them, don't you want to track them, and so on. So it very much depends on the industry. But if you're buying and selling, then it suddenly becomes a lot easier, because remember, we're only using 3 or 4 different tracking codes, not 30.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think that whole idea of planning ahead and tracking chimes in really well with this joke.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
So a woman was told she only had 6 months to live. Oh my God, said the woman. What shall I do? Marry an accountant, suggested the doctor. Why? Asked the woman. Will that make me live longer? No, replied the doctor, but it will seem longer. That clearly is pity laugh. You see, you've got to try, right, you're doing the next joke, because that was all right. I mean, that was the best of a bad bunch. But I'm going to pass you over. You're going to have a look and through some of these. While you're having a flick through those, let me ask you this. Are you able to kind of measure the impact? So do you have that kind of before and after moment? So, because I think the one thing that a lot of people fear is they'll think, okay, kind of get the idea of an FD. I kind of probably don't feel that comfortable in that area, potentially, especially if I don't come from that background at all. I know it's going to be good for me, but I know it's going to cost me as well. So can I try and reassure myself that spending the money is going to pay dividends in the long run?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I've definitely worked in businesses where implementing precisely what we've just talked about has enabled us to make decisions which has created more profit and stopped us from chasing dead end customers or potential customers or industries that we now know are in decline. So it depends on the circumstances, but I mean, ultimately you still need to make decisions based on the information that we found. I would always say it's still ultimately, I mean, most of the clients I have would be owner managed. So it would be the manager owns the whole company, or at least more than 50%. And so it's always going to be their decisions in terms of which direction we want to be heading in. Maybe there's a strategic reason why we're heading in a direction which is potentially opposite to the information we've got at hand. But yeah, if we can take the time to make decisions based on the information, then I'm certain that there is additional money to be had. And finding out where, especially in terms of professional services, where your employees are spending a lot of time and not making much profit. And it's not necessarily on the low invoicing work, but it's just where time and scope creep always seems to get out of hand. And for me, it's either related to a certain client or it's related to a certain type of project.
Okay, so that's interesting. So the whole idea of being able to have a better understanding of what your staff are actually up to is important, but how do you go about measuring that?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately it would be timesheets, and like you, I've come across companies that don't want to their employees spending their time filling out timesheets, and I do understand that. I mean, ultimately, you're trying to create a happy workplace for people to work. But if you wanted to analyze the numbers, then ultimately you do need the timesheets. But more importantly, you need someone reviewing the timesheets and again producing a set of information in order for everyone to make some decisions on. There's no point in simply collecting the timesheet hours in order to invoice your client, potentially writing off hours each month, but not recording why.
Okay, so the timesheets might want to have some special how much time do you spend on social media column to go into them as well then, so you know how much time is actually being spent by your staff doing that.
Yeah, but I mean, I always want my employees to be honest, so I would never come down on an employee for wherever they're spending their time. If they are taking longer on a job than they should be, then it is what it is. There's always a reason behind that. And we can assume it's not that the employee doesn't know what they're doing. Or maybe, if anything, it might pick up a training need. My my experience says that employees aren't going to record how much time they're spending on social media, so there probably isn't so much point in adding that. So you don't want timesheets to be a burden on your staff, because otherwise that's going to increase costs anyway. So we're looking to gain valuable information by asking them nicely to record where they're spending their hours.
I mean, it seems that that's kind of quite an interesting area for technology maybe to come in. So are you aware of things like where artificial intelligence or machine learning might be able to track that, so you don't have to worry so much about the timesheets and it's just being taken care of in the background?
I'm not aware specifically of anything which is tracking an employee's time as they work. Certainly the tools are available where there are sand timers and so on, where you can start and stop yourself. But artificial intelligence and just IT in general will be taking over the bookkeeping and accounting role probably sooner rather than later, especially in relation to other industries. Yeah.
Okay. I think we probably need a joke from you at this
point. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. One minute. Okay, what's the difference between...
You're laughing already. Oh, I love it. Okay.
What's the difference between an accountant and a lawyer? The accountant knows he's boring.
Actually, yeah, okay, that's fair. I mean, I'm not sure if that's a joke or just actually a kind of quite an accurate observation. Can we say that? No, we can't say that. We like it. We like lawyers as well. Okay, all right, shut up, move on. Projections.
Yes.
So one other thing that the FDs can do is to start helping people. It's a really difficult area for particularly with the companies you're working with, particularly with founder owner companies, where you have to commit, essentially it's your money you want to commit. And if you want to start planning and growing for the future, you might have to spend money up front in order to try and invest to get something in the long run. So presumably your role can come in to start looking about what the projections could be in terms of going, okay, I mean, do you go in and ask people, where do you want to be in 1 year, 2 year, 3 years from a financial point of view?
Yeah, well, I try to. And it often depends on how much time the MD or CEO wants to give to that. It also depends, I would say, any businesses I work in which have external investors, then absolutely we're doing that, because we need to be supplying the investors with our forecasts and then showing them how we're getting on relative to where we said we would be. But yeah, I mean, in an absolute ideal world, we would certainly be projecting where we're going to be at the very least over the next 12 months, and ideally over the next 3 years would be a minimum for me. I think people get... They don't know where to start when it comes to projections and forecastings, especially in regards to sales. And so what I always try to steer them towards is setting targets rather than what we would call projections. And you might say, well, it's the same thing. But once you understand, you know, how much money they want at the end of each month, we can then start basing our targets on that. And we can then focus resources on hitting those targets. So yeah, but for me, my experience is that smaller businesses are put off by forecasting because they don't know where to start.
But presumably, if you want to try and spend some money, it's better to have some targets in place because you know when you've achieved the goals that you're setting out to
yeah,
go for, as opposed to kind of having that big vision going, right, we want to do this, so therefore I need to have this role, and this role in place, because otherwise I'll never get there. But you're able to put in a lot more systems, which would enable you to work out how that investment is paying off.
Exactly, and hopefully on a weekly or monthly basis, we can see where we are relative to where we needed to be at that point. So a lot quicker in the process, we can see, or in the life of the project or the investment, we can see where we are and whether we want to abort. Maybe if it's doing really well, we might want to apply more funds into it and increase the investment, or maybe we want to pause. So yeah, I think reporting on the actuals relative to these targets is fundamental in achieving the ultimate goal.
So people say that often you learn from your mistakes. So with that in mind, are there any particular catastrophes that you've seen that you've been witness to that you can share with us?
It's difficult to share. I certainly have seen some catastrophes in my time. But funnily enough, it probably comes back to, did we set targets and did you make anyone responsible for the budgets that you provided them and their targets? See, for me, there needs to be a direct correlation between the targets that we all agree we need to hit and the budget you then provide to someone in order to hit that target. And then there's responsibility there. I would say where we don't set that out from the start, that's where the disaster strikes.
And presumably the other thing is you actually have to measure those targets as you go along. It's you know, there are some people who might just set the target, hand that responsibility over and go, away you go. But actually, how often do you feel like you should be reviewing?
Well, for me, it would be monthly. I would be producing monthly management accounts and we would be reviewing where we are relative to where we needed to be at this point. So generally, a target's going to be in 12 months' time, whether it's how much revenue we want or how much revenue we want from a certain sector. Are you hitting the? And then you divide that by 12. There might be a slight incremental curve from month zero to month 12. And we can agree that from the start. And then, you know, where are we? And do we need to throw more resources at it in month 2, 3, 4 in order to get back on track?
Okay. And then I mean, you were telling me that you use the description to be the pillar in the business.
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I would like to, in every business that I work in, that I am one of the pillars of success of that business. I want, before the business owner or CEO makes any decisions, that they're coming back to the finance function, checking on the information that we've been able to record and making decisions based on that information. And again, setting budgets and targets based on their strategy and the information we've received.
So it comes back, it's not just about the quality of the product or the service that you're offering. It's got to be, it's got to be profitable, hasn't it? And also you need to be able to really think through, I suppose if you're going to grow, make sure that you either don't run out of money, that you've got the right cash flow in place.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, cash flow is fundamental. But I think going back to the question earlier about what's the difference between an accountant and a finance director is that the finance director is producing information where decisions can be made, whereas an accountant is just collating the results and giving you the answer.
I think what the difference between an accountant and a financial director needs a proper punchline, really. I think we've got to work on that one, haven't we? Feels like it's kind of like there with the lawyer, isn't it?
Is that going to be in your list of jokes?
No, well, I think that must want to hand over to you, kind of into your, you know, and when you're talking to your other accountants and those secret WhatsApp groups that you've got going, that, you know, someone's going to come up with a decent punchline for that one. But you're the only people who are going to get it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Have you got another joke there?
What did the accountant's wife say when she couldn't fall asleep? Darling, tell me about your work.
My dad was an accountant. I can see that working.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I say my wife certainly never asked me about my work.
Okay.
So, right. Yeah, so maybe I should try.
Yeah. So let me ask you a little bit about you. So where are you from?
So from Bournemouth originally, grew up in Bournemouth, went to Porchester School, which is Harewood Academy now, okay. I believe. And went to Bournemouth Poole College, but then Kingston University.
Okay, so you left and did you go and work in London?
Yeah, that's right. So I was up in Kingston University for 4 years, worked in the City of London for 3 years, but funny enough, my degree was in software engineering.
Oh.
And so going into accounting was actually a career change. So, yeah, so I've now done the two female repelling educational courses in IT and accounting.
Okay. And as a software engineer, that's a bit of a shift. What made you Take the leap.
I made the leap because it was not, software or IT wasn't of any interest of mine, and I was no good at it. And but ultimately competing.
And you didn't know any of this before you did the degree?
Well, you know, when you start the degree and you think that, well, it's fine, I'll finish the degree and then get a job in something that I really want to do, because, you know, that's what everyone does. No one gets a job in the degree they took. And then you leave university, and then all of the recruiters tell you that, actually, no, you've got a vocational qualification here, and actually the only job you're going to get is in IT. And then, that, you know, I felt stuck, I would say, for 3 years.
Okay, so the reason you have ended up in the job that you're doing is actually down to your lack of careers advice at school.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Hopefully that's improved a bit these days. But yeah, I think me and all of my friends from school are probably stuck in careers. Well, me no longer due to the career change.
Yeah.
But yeah, most people are stuck in careers they never thought they were going to have.
And what brought you back to Bournemouth?
Yeah, so I actually lived in South Korea for 3 years after London. So I was working as an English teacher. And so that's what brought me back to Bournemouth. I finished working as a teacher, decided I wanted to or needed to retrain, and decided I also didn't want to go back to London. I wanted to go back to somewhere I knew. And so, yeah, came back, lived with my parents for a year and lived the dream with, AAT accounting courses for whatever that was, 6 years.
And do you find, I mean, that software engineering is quite a process-driven discipline. Do you feel that the way in which you think actually has naturally lent yourself into working in this way?
I've never seen, when I speak to a lot of designers and they seem to think that people were born to, they were born creative, or they were born to be logical. I don't quite see it that way. For me, I think I've got a creative mind and I've got a logical mind. So it's not really, I think it's just, I've always just been interested in business, I suppose. If it wasn't accounting, then for me it would be business management or marketing. So any of those spheres, I would have been quite happy in doing. As it was, my parents owned a company at the time who needed a bookkeeper, and so fulfilled my ambition of changing career into a business-minded in profession.
So your parent, that's how strongly they wanted to get you back out of the house, was to get you a proper job so you could afford to leave again.
Yeah, exactly that. So for 1 year, I was living with my parents and working with my parents at the age of about 27. So, yeah, it was, you know, that was a good year.
Back into things that, you know, make you attractive.
Yeah.
And chalk that one up as well.
Yeah, trainee accountant living with their parents. Yeah.
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 Chris, thank you very much. It's been really good to talk to you. And thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed the episode. There's more information about all of our guests and all the topics they talk about at 10thdegree.co.uk. And also, please do review us. We really want to share the lessons and the advice that's given as widely as possible, and this really helps us to get that message out there. Thanks.